discussing the ideas, the challenges, and the technology of the crypto economy. This is a Crypto Economy Chat. All right, crew, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. We have got a crypto chat with Bird and Carr from the Friends Against Government podcast. They had me on the other day, and we had an absolute blast, had a whole lot of fun, and I think you guys will enjoy it. Again, this is the Friends Against Government podcast. I will basically share the link to their podcast, as well as the links that they added underneath it, just so you can follow them on Twitter and see all the other stuff that they're doing. I've only listened to maybe 4 or 5 episodes of the podcast, but it's been a whole lot of fun so far, and really, really enjoyed. Thanks both of you guys, if you listen to this, for having me on. It was fun as shit. So with that, we will just go ahead and jump right in. I will be airing, you'll hear their intro and everything, because I am just going to drop that in as today's episode, Crypto Chat number 2 with the Friends Against Government podcast. All right, guys, I will catch you tomorrow. Enjoy the show.
All right, everybody, welcome to the 23rd episode of the Friends Against Government podcast. That's the Fagcast. I'm Carr. I'm sure I'm Carr. With me, as always, is Bird. Bird, what's the word?
Nothing. I'm doing well. I hope I'm not lagging, because we're already facing problems. The feds have already started breaking down the doors.
Goddamn.
And, well, this is one of those episodes where I'm really happy because I get to just sit back and listen to two smart people talk about crypto and drool on my chest as I try and figure out really what all the intricacies are.
Well, that brings us to our guest today. We are so happy we were able to get Crypto Economy Podcast Guy from the Crypto Economy Podcast on the Fagcast. Guy, thanks for coming on, man. What's going on?
Not a whole lot, man. And very happy to be on the show, officially a fag with all the cool guys.
That's right. We've really made waves on turning the word fag around, I feel like.
Yeah, we're the ones. Yeah.
It's now the end.
We're the ones who really push that forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
So before we started recording, we were talking about if we wanted to talk about anything specific, but I think we're just going to shoot the shit. And first, before we get into anything, I want to say that I really just appreciate your podcast and the time that you take to do it. And for anybody that's not subscribed to the Crypto Economy Podcast, basically, you more or less just read, you pick an interesting article from, you know, any number of, you know, Bitcoin Talk or whatever, you know, any online sources, mm-hmm. read the article, and then you take time to break it down and maybe discuss implications. And in every intro, it's, I can't even remember what the intro says, but it's like, for those that don't have time to read all the latest Bitcoin articles or something
that's
like that,
me,
and like,
which
it's
is
so
me.
Perfect, because that's, until I quit my job and was unemployed, that was exactly my problem. I just didn't have time to, do it. So yeah. Anyway, I really appreciate that you do it, and it's a perfect little it plugs a gap.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm glad. That's why I did it. It's funny, like I went such a long span of time just like so aggravated that I could not read all the stuff. I would open up like 50 tabs of articles that I was like, ooh, this mm-hmm. seems interesting. I would love to read this. And then, you know, go off to work or go out, do all my stuff. And I'm listening to audiobooks all the time. Like, I kill audiobooks like nobody's business, and podcasts.
Yep.
I mean, every minute I can get, I try to consume something in audio. And then I was like, man, I can probably figure out how to make this shit work. You know, like, I can do it. And since then, I've probably started reading. That's the big thing, and I think I've said this on the podcast actually, is that I'm just happy that it's gotten me to like fully read all of these articles to decide whether or not they're good for the stuff. Because so many times, so many people, you know, I'll read about stuff how like people's attention span is like 2 paragraphs on the typical article, and then they'll just go off and they think they have an idea, and I would catch myself doing that shit all the time. I would read a headline and a paragraph, and I would be like, oh, I know all about this topic, and then I'd go debate somebody.
I like to tell myself that I read, and really, it's just that. It's just jumping back and forth for days.
I mean, that 50 tab thing is so accurate. It's like falling into a Wikipedia hole. Yeah. It's just like one thing is linked, and then another thing, and you're like, why am I reading about, like, a failed blockchain from 2013 or something? This is completely useless information at this point.
What's great about my podcast listener is it's Overcast, so you can actually speed up the podcast.
Yes.
So I listen to his podcast on like times four.
Overcast
so
all the way.
I'm listening to it. Yeah, and it's like, and it's like, it's just great. It just helps me consume as much as
possible.
Everybody
talks like roast beef on Overcast.
I don't know if I have the ability to do that on mine. I use like pot. I don't know.
You got to get one. You got to get one that will double the speed.
Double time it?
You have to do it.
Ticket to insanity.
I don't
need anything
else
pushing
me
over the edge, man.
Yeah.
Right? I'm already teetering.
Oh, man. There's so much to talk about in the crypto space, especially recently. But since I'm such a dimwit, Carr, what do you got for me?
Well, I think the biggest thing... So, I don't know what, specific... I guess nuances of crypto you're in, or if you're like an active trader or anything like that.
I do trade on occasion, but the difficulty with my tax bill discourages me quite a bit, and also I treat it just like it's like kind of a fun gambling thing with like a very tiny portion of money, but so I don't take it seriously.
That's literally what Carr does.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Carr is the most degenerate gambler when it comes to crypto.
But I saw that there is an announcement of at least some indication of progress towards a Bitcoin ETF.
Yes. Yes, I did see that. I have not dug much into it, but that looks crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, just from I know that there's always a, and we haven't discussed this explicitly, but just judging by your podcast and some of your activity on Twitter and who you retweet, I assume that you are pretty much a friend against government with us. I know there's always hesitation when institutional stuff comes in. But in terms of bringing money into the space, man, an ETF that has to back its assets with, actual Bitcoin, it would be crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's actually a really interesting – I think not only the ETF just kind of as a measure for opening liquidity in the market is just amazing in the sense of people who have no access or no technical expertise being able to – get access to it, but more in kind of showing some of the utility of Bitcoin's provenance is that, like, if that company, whoever, like, let's say it's the CBOE and they get their ETF, their ability to prove that they have Bitcoin in, like, to back, like, you can't. Like, no matter what you do with any other asset, you can't really prove it. You're just trusting a different party involved, you're trusting the auditor. But the CBOE with an ETF can actually publicly prove to anybody willing to check that they have the Bitcoin to back the ETF.
Just monitor their designated addresses and you know that it's there.
Which is something that no other asset can claim. Like, you just can't do that.
Let me stop the two of you real quick, because that's a lot of letters, and I don't know about how many of our listeners know all those letters, but start from the beginning with this. You threw out a lot of letters there. CBD oil, I heard. Yeah. Maybe we can get it to THC. What is this? What is this thing? Explain it to a newbie like me, somebody who should probably be reading Crypto for Dummies at this point.
CBOE is the Chicago Board of Exchange, I believe.
Options Exchange.
Options Exchange, okay. And they're literally just think of them as a financial institution that resells, packaged financial instruments. So, like if you want to get hedged, like if you want to buy gold on the financial markets, you don't go digging around in your local market to find a block of a brick of gold. You want to buy just a digital or electronic representation that will go up and down with the value of gold. So they create an ETF. That institution gets themselves a big vault full of gold and then sells digital points in relation to any certain amount of that gold, an ounce. And,
So the gold doesn't gold move doesn't anywhere. Move. It's
just electronic changing of hands and... You know, ETF is an exchange traded fund, but that's all it is. It's just a digital point for a gold that somebody else is holding for you.
Right. So
there's
it's like so now it's like meant to be an easy way to expose yourself to certain markets without actually having to physically expose yourself to those markets.
You can buy corn without putting a bunch of corn in your basement.
Yeah.
Right. So now what are the implications of this with a cryptocurrency?
It means that when. Like right now, if you want to get exposed to crypto, if you want to invest in Bitcoin or the future of that market economy, you have to actually download a wallet, figure out what the hell a key is, how to back it up, how to keep it safe, and God knows computer illiteracy is rampant, particularly with security, and so you have to protect it. And it just comes with this massive, massive overhead and headache of trying to figure out what the hell the thing is and how to handle it. And with an ETF, you can just log into your E-Trade that you purchased your Apple stock or your Netflix or whatever, and then just buy Bitcoin ETF. And the company, the CBOE in this example, if it is approved, has to buy Bitcoin on your behalf or already has the Bitcoin for the amount that you're purchasing.
So they actually have to buy it.
Yes.
They actually have to have it in their possession.
They actually have to have it in their possession, yes.
And that's why this is potentially a very big event because it has to be physically backed, so they have to buy it, which is you're basically decreasing the hurdles to the average consumer, the average investor who's been hearing about Bitcoin, does not want any of the risk of, like Guy was saying, downloading a wallet and figuring out what the fuck that is all about. Because that's still kind of, we don't think about it, but remember the first time
oh my God.
Bought something and
even setting up a fucking Monero wallet or something, it's still
sometimes kind of a fucking nightmare.
I still don't even have a graphical user interface for Monero. I'd still just use the command line one.
Yep.
See, like that. Like, I don't know. I wouldn't even begin to understand that.
Do you have a hardware wallet?
Yes. I've actually been shilling my affiliate link for Trezor lately on the podcast.
Oh, okay. Get the fuck off the
table. Oh my God.
No, I've never actually used one. I mean, it sounds like they're the Ledger and the Trezor virtually.
I have them both just to try them out. I got a Keep Key as well. I haven't really used it to any extent.
Wait, you have, what is it?
Keep Key.
I'm not sure if I'm familiar with that.
Yeah, K-E-E-P Key. It's an interesting one, but I really haven't even played around with it much. And I mostly just bought them because I wanted to see what they all did. My go-to that I actually use is my Trezor.
Okay, yeah.
So... can I take us back two or three months, maybe even a little longer than that. Carr, you and I think this might have even been around the time we were starting the podcast. I cannot for the life of me remember the term. There's something that either banks or investment firms were doing with crypto where they were setting up contracts where you didn't actually have to own any crypto. Mm-hmm. You could just go short or long on them and people would actually give you fiat for them. What the hell was that called? Do you remember?
Futures contracts.
Futures. Yeah. So this is different than a future.
Yes.
Yeah. In that futures, you have to actually...
There's no Bitcoin behind a futures contract.
But in this...
You could sell a futures contract on the weather. A futures contract is just saying, I am putting up X amount of dollars... And it's against a contract that says the price of Bitcoin will be lower or higher by this set amount of time.
But then the contract can say whether or not it will be paid in crypto or cash, or is it always always going to be paid in fiat.
All the futures that are available now are paid in fiat. There is not a, well, I take that back. There are specifically
I'm sure the significant ones, like BitMEX,
that sell futures for Bitcoin. But any of the broader markets, the CME futures, the major financial markets have nothing to do with actual crypto settlement. It's all fiat.
So, so this this new thing, this new set of letters, which I'm going to have struggled to remember, this is much better because this actually has to have real, you know, a real amount of crypto behind it.
You're actually purchasing a stake in real Bitcoin that exists.
So this
somewhere.
Is when Carr says the amount of money that's going to come into the market is much bigger. So this is
potentially, I mean, and it's important to understand that they're two different. There's kind of two different financial instruments. Like the forward contracts are kind of meant were originally meant to really just mitigate risk for, you know, let's say if you're you're a car manufacturer,
right?
And let's say steel has been very volatile because of a war or something like that, and you want to say, okay, I want to lock in the price of steel 3 months from now when I have to buy my, you know, the next bundle of steel to make this car. The forward contract came out of that volatility and said, you know, it's just a paper, you know, contract saying I will buy if, you know, steel's at $50 and, you know, you pay some kind of premium and you say, all right, I'll buy steel at maybe $55 in 3 months. Mm-hmm. And if steel goes up, you know, it came out of the market in a way that people weren't, I don't think originally were really speculating. They were really just guarding themselves. It was a risk mitigation.
Yeah, it's a pretty brilliant like financial mechanism actually. Because it allows you to hedge, you know, like okay, I'm okay with the price of steel or Bitcoin or whatever today, at, you know, whatever I've had invested in or need to purchase with it. So I'm going to hedge because my purchase isn't for 3 months. So, and I have no idea what the hell will happen in those 3 months. It might get insane. There's a war, blah, blah, blah. And so I'm going to hedge, and if the price falls, I will make in profit the gap what I would lose had I not hedged. So you end up guaranteeing the price today in 3 months, regardless of what happens.
Yeah, and in theory, Bird, it was like if you knew that you could buy steel at $50 or something like that, and that would satisfy your profit margin for your car business,
right?
You're not really in the business of speculating,
right?
You just want to make sure that the steel stays in within the bounds of reason for you to be able to lock in your car manufacturer.
You just want
to
stay the price for a volatile asset,
which is why, you know, a lot of people were griping about the futures exchange for Bitcoin. And I think it's absolutely critical to have some kind of forward contract system. Now, you know, with the obvious huge caveat of I don't want it to be regulated by the United States government, you know.
But it's going to be anyway. And so you just kind of
have to accept it. You know, whatever.
Right.
You know, and that's a separate discussion.
Exactly.
But just speaking of having a means to hedge your risk, especially in something as Bitcoin, as volatile as Bitcoin, you know, if you're a merchant. And I mean, let's just theoretically say you're an online merchant and you take Bitcoin and Bitcoin only, and you have to depend on profits from selling something to feed your family. Yeah, you want to be able to mitigate some risk.
Yeah, so,
and that's where the futures market, I think, is critical. A futures market. Obviously, I would prefer it to be in free market hands rather than criminals' hands. But nonetheless, I think it's really important to have. And so that's one instrument. And then the ETF is just allowing, you know, and again, huge caveat, I don't like all the financial regulations and all that, obviously, but for the standard consumer, they perceive Bitcoin as very dangerous, and on their terms, it is. But if they buy an ETF, then they're quote-unquote protected by all of the financial regulations of the United States of America.
So you like this as
to bring more money into the space.
So you like this as a method of introducing people to crypto rather than as a as an actual like standard way of I don't know how to say it as a sort of standard way of having people operate in crypto. You think it's just it's better as an introduction for most people?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about better. You know, you got to think about all the possible implications. And Guy, I'd like to hear your take on this too.
Right.
But you know, more money into this market feeds developers. More money in this market brings more people in. More brains in this market creates more opportunities, you know? And so if you just look at it from a macro perspective, I want more people in this market. And if one person out of every 100 that buys one, you know, buys into a Bitcoin ETF comes in, hey, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I think just in a general sense, both of it, like even an ETF or even a futures contract is incredibly healthy for the market. You know, people talk about like, oh, the futures coincided with the crash of the market. And it's like, well, technically, wouldn't that mean it's a good thing? Because it resulted in like a stem for the hype cycle. Like it caused the hype cycle to reel in sooner than it may have otherwise, and caused a 70% decline instead of the 2013 90% decline, you know. Like I think I see this all as a healthy thing, and a bunch of people will constantly point out, and I've read so many intricate articles of this trade and this amount of, you know, money entering, and this is what the price did, talking about how speculators run the market. But the only thing I can constantly fall back on is a speculator is not a net trade for the underlying asset. So like if I am selling pressure as a speculator, I'm only holding it for, you know, what, a week, a month? Like it's no extended period of time here. So yeah, I'm selling pressure today to cause the price to go down, but I was buying pressure last week. Yeah. So it just, I think all of it just will work to decrease the volatility and open up the broader markets when something like a ETF and futures being able to hedge against it. That's exactly what allows somebody to use it in 2 weeks for a trade in oil between countries, or some huge production line, like manufacturing, like first level or first order, like capital goods type of investment and purchases. Because if you're planning to make an iPhone start pumping out an iPhone in 5 months, and you want to make that purchase with Bitcoin, if you don't have a futures contract, you're not going to use Bitcoin. Because you have no idea what price you're going to get all that aluminum at. Right. So I think all of it is a good thing. And all the constant like articles and talks about manipulation and all this crap, I think it's just tertiary nonsense. I think it's picking, you know, everybody's talking about the leaves on the forest trees.
Right.
You know?
Right. And I couldn't agree more. And to add two more points onto that, you know, remember that these contracts have a time limit. So if you're shorting something, eventually you have to buy it. So, you know, that sell pressure eventually is mitigated by the ultimate buy pressure. You know, it's not like you can just take out 4 billion, you know, short contracts and just crash it. Like, you can't. And then the other thing that I would point out is that, you know, if paper trading on the sidelines that has no connection with the actual blockchain is enough to kill this thing, then it ain't what we thought it was.
Exactly. I so deeply agree with that point. That if somebody creates a damn futures contract and it kills Bitcoin, this shit was never gonna work.
Right, right.
I'm just listening to the two of you.
The stands of a horse race and it killing the horse. Like, yeah, that horse wasn't that healthy.
I'm just listening to the two of you, and you're basically speaking another language. And then one of you says something, and then the other goes, aha! And I'm kind of just looking at the two of you like,
Yeah,
of course.
That sounds right. Okay.
So what crypto do I buy? Oh, Christ. Oh,
you got anything connect. To you, you got anything to jam in here, Bird?
On Bitcoin? No.
Anything.
I just let you do all. Listen, man, if this podcast is my life, you're my financial advisor.
God. I'm unemployed, man. Maybe not a great idea.
Well, that means you should just dedicate more of your time to creating glue coin.
Yeah,
glue coin. Oh, I like it.
Yeah, that's good
stuff. Oh, you mentioned that on the podcast. That was like two episodes back, wasn't it?
Goo.
It's like a running joke. For like a year ago, I decided to take the creative direction of like a glue huffing altcoin trader. Like, that was going to be the direction of my Twitter profile. And then I
like it.
I just kind of hung to it for a while.
And I'm behind this.
I'm waiting for Homeowners Association coin.
Just very recently.
Yeah, okay, all right. Yeah, I can't remember exactly when I started following you and listening to the podcast, but it's probably been, I've been lurking for quite a while without, like, before kind of reaching out. But you probably noticed me retweeting and stuff like that for, you know.
Yeah, yeah, I noticed like a handful. It's like, there's like 20 or 30 people that, like, I constantly see their icons, and I'm like, yeah, bitches.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what, Bird, seriously, you gotta, you bring up, you know, you can, we can take it back to Sasquatch if you want.
No, I just, you know, I've always, I'm just curious about, if we can take it to other coins, because now we're very Bitcoin-centric here. I like talking about shit coins. Shit coins really interest me.
Yeah.
They're great, man.
Shit coins are lots of fun.
I love talking about shit coin. I like to, I don't know what the, there should be an appropriate term for, like, every coin between 2 and, like, 15, but everything after 15 is what I'm interested in. Everything that's, like, 16th
you're kind of
place.
Up,
ah.
I was about to say, you hearing this, too?
Yeah.
Let me see.
Something between shitcoins 2 or 15. I don't know about 15 shitcoins, but
No. What I'm saying is I think there should be a term for coins between 2 and 15 on the rating.
Oh, like coin market cap?
Coin market cap.
Yeah.
And then every
coins, decent coins, decent coins, coins, and then shit coins.
And then everything after that. Everything after that is a shit coin, even if it's good.
until it's above 15. Ooh, that's a tough one though, because BitConnect was like four or five for a second there.
Dude, that has been the most, like, I feel like this whole cryptocurrency thing is it's like a fucking ride. Like,
yes.
there's so much drama and so many like interesting threads that you, like that whole BitConnect thing, like all the way through from September till whenever it happened in January, people were coming onto their Reddit and being like, this is obviously a scam and here's why.
I can't believe it's hilarious, because I have a couple of friends that I know personally who invested in it fully aware that it was a scam. They're like, oh no, this is a scam. And I was
because it only locks
your coins
enough?
For 2 months. So if it keeps going for 2 months, I'm going to make a killing because everybody else is stupid. And I'm just wondering how many people are buying in thinking that they're just outsmarting the other idiot. It's like 90% people who are fully aware it's a scam, but think they're going to make a killing off of everybody who's retarded.
What is it? What's the saying? Scams pump hardest?
Yes. Yes.
What's your take on, I think I already know, but what's your take on Ripple?
Oh, good Lord. Ripple is an SQL database in somebody's computer.
Yeah.
Ripple is it's hurting. And what's funny is that you see them trying to distance themselves, which is the worst case scenario.
What do you mean by that?
They don't want Ripple associated with the company Ripple Labs because they're so scared of lawsuits. And from what I've heard, I haven't seen any proof of this, but I don't know exactly how you prove it regarding the lack of openness in some areas of the network, but it looks like they hold like 80 or 90% of the tokens themselves.
Yeah.
So they literally just printed tokens.
Aren't there like 18 trillion tokens too?
Yeah, it's something absolutely absurd. Like, the whole thing is just kind of a joke. And
real?
None of their quote unquote products that they're trying to sell, like XRapid and all of this stuff, they don't even use Ripple. So they talk about like these banking partnerships that are trying to use their API, and it looks like they're trying to say, oh, they're going to use Ripple, but they're not using the actual token even use the API for their, you know, payment mechanism or whatnot. They're just not, I don't know. The whole thing just seems so shady.
Yeah,
I
feel like
I don't touch it.
I feel like one day we should get a couple people together who know about crypto and do an episode where we go like 1 through 15 down on the coin market cap chart and
just talk about
what we think about each coin. But by the time we get to the second coin, there's going to be fucking wildfires.
Yeah. Or I feel like the fags are pretty split, so we don't.
Let's see here.
Necessarily incite the flame war now.
Yeah, right. That's when we really want to take this thing into the ground.
Yeah, yeah.
I try to be very peaceful in my debates. I have I have a couple of people, particularly like you know, quote unquote big blockers, that I'll argue with pretty regularly. But we always seem to end it amiably. Like
even if
they call me like a complete asshole or idiot, right. I'm just like, all right, well. You know. This happens on Twitter. Take a breather.
The amount of times that Carr has been called a government shill.
for any old thing.
Yeah, for anything.
No.
At the end of the day, I was down in the dumps about the split at first, mm-hmm. And for a long time.
I had those moments.
Yeah, but I think that it ultimately is good because if big blocks are the way to go, it's good to have an exploration committee out there.
Yes.
Exploring that. You know, this is a free market. So, explore it and see where that goes and everybody else on that coin market cap list all the way down, you know, when you get down into the 400s where all my bags hang out, like, you know, they're exploring their thing. and so I think, you know, that's, it's an important thing. And I wish a lot of the venom was taken out because it's, you know, it's time. Like, it's been so damn long.
Give it up. Like, quit. Everybody quit being a bitch, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just let it go. And I'm right there with you though. Like, I'm really happy that it exists because it means that in 2 years, 3 years, we'll know.
Yeah.
You know, like if it doesn't exist, it's just always just us screaming at each other and not having any proof one way or the other.
Right.
We can always deny history or, oh, it failed because, you know, a bad developer got involved or whatever it was. But having a live example with many billions of dollars in it one way or the other gives us – it's that's how the market works is start 1,000 companies – and 995 of them fail, and 5 of them succeed because they had everything right. So
stop talking about my bags, guy.
as you guys were talking about that, I just looked down into the 400s where Carr keeps all of his bags. Yeah. And there was Bible coin
down there in a box below the floorboards.
They got Bible coin here. We got the champ coin.
Ooh, that's the good one,
man.
That's
the good some one. Of these things, I gotta start a cryptocurrency and I make a few bucks off of it. Jesus,
do it. Everybody, it's the big thing right now. Everybody's doing it. You gotta make your token.
Do you think that's gonna keep going, or do you think there's gonna be like a backlash and because the big thought I think during the while Bitcoin was really coming down, the whole market was really on the backside of that peak in December.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the two things that I would hear frequently for 2018 were privacy coins, and flight to quality. So maybe a death of a lot of the coin market, you know, the deep digs on coin market cap and more, and a lot of that capital would push upwards towards the more established projects. But I'm not sure if I've really seen that. I haven't looked at like, you know, dominance charts or anything like that recently. Just haven't really had a reason to. But it doesn't feel like that. It feels like there's still just a shitload of coins coming out.
Yeah, I think it has slowed down. I watch like the ICO trackers and stuff. I think it will start to gear more towards. I think securitized tokens will become a thing. I think the idea of actually having like a digital representation of a stock or something because these things are bearer instruments. When you own them, like that is the proof that you own them is the fact that you are holding it. You're holding the key to it. And we don't, that's not existed before in the, you know, age of electronics, so to speak. It's always been, you own a input on a ledger somewhere that says you own the paper copy that some company holds for you. Whereas we're moving towards the actual thing itself being digital. But with all the tokens and stuff, I think it's just it's a matter of time. And I think it is slowing down, and because anything that's novel, people are going to buy the next thing just because for the sheer sake that they don't know anything about it. It looks exciting. There's a lot of shit going on. And so you know, the market's just blowing up out of nowhere and everybody's like, what are these things? Oh, it's a blue token instead of a red token. I must buy the blue one. And I think that's an inevitability. I mean, we saw the exact same thing with the dot-com bubble is people were, you know, it was like shopping or pets.com was sold for $20 million merely by its URL. And there was no website on it. It just says, you know, 404 not found on the website. Right. So, I think that was inevitable. I think this is a period that we had to go through, but I don't entirely think that the idea is going anywhere. I think there will be companies that decide they are going to have a token represent shares in their company. Maybe it's a proof of stake or something like that. And they'll have a guaranteed, like, built-in, like, smart contract dividends and profit sharing type mechanisms built into it. And it will be – they'll manage it themselves, or they'll have some other company manage their chain or their side chain, whatever the hell it is, to basically – design a company around a set of smart contracts of just organizing people in finance.
Yep. I remember you read an article about that, right?
Yeah.
I remember that.
At least one or two months ago.
Yeah.
Touching on that topic specifically.
Right. Yeah. And those are like such interesting, like there's no way to possibly wrap your mind around all of the differences that this technology is going to make in the world. Mm-hmm. And one of the more possibly boring, but kind of interesting things it is just the sheer amount of like paperwork that's not going to have to get done.
Yes.
And like a whole and just accounting bullshit will just disappear. Yeah, are just wiped out. Yeah. Like, you know, and that's a good thing. Like, you know, it's not that I don't want those people to have jobs, but I want the standard work week to go from 40 to 20 and 20 to 10, you know.
Exactly.
Shut up, you commie.
At least the necessary work week. What was that, Bert?
You commie.
Yeah. Well, right now my work week's zero, so.
Yeah, right. Want everybody to work less.
This is your work week. Your work week's over in 20 minutes.
but that's like a fascinating outcropping of the just blinding amount of efficiency that's going to come into production.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's crazy to think about.
Yeah. It's one of the most exciting things. It's so crazy. I went down this rabbit hole and it just doesn't stop. It's one of those, it's so much like the internet in its protocol, that it's TCP/IP is just a protocol for making a connection with somebody and sending packets back and forth. But you can put anything you want in that packet. You can change it. You can create, you know, it turns into streaming packets. You can reorganize them. And, you know, 40 years later, after we discovered and started using TCP/IP, we've got Netflix and it's got more subscribers than cable TV, you know?
Yeah.
And I think we're seeing the exact same thing occur in finance is we've created a protocol for digital scarcity, a way for us to reach consensus around what the state of financial favors to be exchanged between people, like their past and, you know, what's left to be exchanged or mitigated. And we can build anything on top of it. Like we have turned value into its most abstract form, a digital token that can be reliably priced against the resources that it's trading.
Yeah.
And we can do whatever the hell we want with it. It's programmable money. It's a dollar that we can turn into any kind of a contract, escrow agreement. I mean, it absolutely blows my mind. It blows my mind. Every time I start talking about it and thinking about it, I can't stop.
That's going to be, you know, they talk about, or you read about just similarities in people of the same age, and you know, they group people into generations and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there's probably, you know, for people roughly, I'll say 25. Or, Jesus, Bird. Did you do that right into the microphone?
That was Bird's mating call.
Yeah,
yeah. Christ. Jesus.
I thought I muted. That's far from mute, my friend.
Sorry. Keep going, sorry.
I don't even remember what I was saying.
I forgot.
Bert, since you, that was a really confident sneeze, so why don't you take the wheel for a second?
All right, fine. One thing I want to ask you about.
All right, no, you're out. Guy, what you got?
Mr. Expert here. Let's diversify here for a minute. Right. Give me, if you can. Over here, we like digital price coin and Syscoin and other such things. Give me a crypto that interests you as far as its platform goes, as far as what features it has.
Something aside from Bitcoin, essentially.
Of course, yeah.
That would be funny if that was not a stipulation. And we just dove right back.
Bitcoin is a really interesting cryptocurrency. Let me tell you about Schnorr signatures.
Let me tell you about coughing to the mic coin.
You know, I don't keep up with it well enough. One that I have been keeping an eye on, and disclaimer, I have a small investment in, and I've just kind of let it sit there for a while just to see if anything comes of it, is Stratus. And it was specifically because I read an article about their scaling mentality, and they're specifically a proof of stake, so they're trying to build a system for like companies to do I think they've got the right approach to make a securitized token and that kind of a thing work, because they're establishing them all as a sidechain. But honestly, that's kind of what Blockstream is doing with the Liquid sidechain, is trying to take these feature-based assets and move them off the chain and like tying them to it with a smart contract or an escrow, so that you don't really have to. There's very limited trust in exchanging it on this, essentially this branch that's off of Bitcoin, and then moving it back on. So that one is one that I've been kind of interested in. I think Cardano is doing something sort of similar with it. 0x is, you know, trying to, they're basically the Binance coin of their exchange.
Right.
So, I mean, those were ones that just got added. Coinbase just announced that they were adding them to, or thinking about adding them to Coinbase.
So those are ones I've been
kind of looking at, because particularly for something like 0x is it's just the token used for, it's basically a utility token for fees on their decentralized exchange. And if, you know, that becomes a thing, if their decentralized exchange works and it becomes fluid, I think that's a huge benefit to the market. You know, I think that's an inevitability too, whether it be atomic swaps on just like an open forum or something, or a specific chain like 0x that has its own utility token. If it becomes huge, I think that'll be a good thing for the market. So maybe the token will work. I'm usually, though, really, really skeptical of utility tokens, but I'm very open to the idea that it might work. So
yeah. I mean, there's just, it's in some ways it feels, it's like you can kind of game theory stuff out and take a stab at what's going to work or what's not going to work or where things are going. But man, this space is just, it's so crazy, and it's about to get 15 times crazier.
Yeah.
You know, and you just don't know what's going to, you know, some of the things that we laugh at today, maybe somebody can employ for some different job. And I know that sounds super vague, but you know, that's intentionally so, because man, you don't know what the hell's going to happen.
Yeah.
It feels really, you know, sometimes you step back and for, if you, you know, I don't have a whole lot of friends that are, you know, personal friends that are as into cryptocurrency as I am.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like, you know, podcasts like these are a little bit of an escape. Because I sound like a maniac. Like, well, like, dude, this is the most incredible fucking thing that has come around since the internet. And the thing about the internet was that it took really freaking long time to realize the potential.
Yeah.
This is rocket fuel.
I actually spoke with a guy named John Wolpert at a recent Bitcoin meet, like a cryptocurrency meetup in the area. And he's working with Consensus, which is a huge blockchain, like just basically developer group, essentially. It's just this huge company that does everything with coding and, you know, whatnot. And he actually had a really good point that he had listened to a woman, I can't remember who it was, give a speech like 3 or 4 years earlier talking about how Bitcoin is the internet in 1992. Mm-hmm. And then a couple years later, he heard her give the speech again, and she said Bitcoin is the internet in 1992. And he said, so it seems like we haven't progressed. Like, why is it still 1992, even though it's 3 years later, kind of thing? And he said, you know, I think we're entirely wrong about it. I think because we have the internet to allow this thing to grow, that we have put it way, way ahead of where it actually is. He said, I think Bitcoin is TCP/IP in 1980. Said maybe 76. You know, we have just made our first connections. We're sending our first packets, and we're figuring out that you can send messages and documents with, you know, full like histories and stuff between universities, and that we have not even begun to see like what we can do with this. We just have a whole lot. We just have a much better platform to get it out there. More people are exposed to it as the internet and compared to the internet in 1980.
I get this feeling like I simultaneously, I don't know if you feel like this, I'm sure you do, but I get this feeling where I simultaneously want it to speed up and slow down at the same time.
Yes.
Like I want it to speed up because I want there, because, you know, the biggest knock that we have probably on crypto is that, you know, by and large, there just really isn't a whole lot of functional use yet. Mm-hmm. There is the potential, but there's not, it hasn't been integrated into old school. Like I possess the warranty deed for my house. It's not registered on a blockchain, you know, type thing. Yeah. It's not, but at the same time, I want it to slow down because I can't keep up. I can't fucking keep up. Mm-hmm. Like it mentally, it's so damn difficult to keep up. There's just so much stuff. And if you are working a full-time job, God forbid you got a family too, it's like, how the hell do you...
You wouldn't have a clue. You wouldn't have a clue.
Yeah. And you keep up by somebody producing a podcast that reads the best Bitcoin article.
What's up? Yeah. That's me.
Whoa. See what I did?
Jesus, I can't keep up. I can't even keep up a quarter as good as either of you. Jesus. See, this is what scares me. This is my fear. If you're telling me that currently Bitcoin is like what the internet was in the 80s, mm-hmm. even before that.
Bitcoin is currently wearing leather pants and a bedazzled jacket.
Yes.
Yes. With a pompadour.
We're soon, but baby, we're about to put on those ripped jeans and plaid.
Can't wait.
Listening to Nirvana and doing heroin. So, but see, that's what scares me is if crypto is basically the 80s internet, and I can't even understand that. I'm becoming the boomer I hate.
Well, Bird, you and I are in the same boat. I know. I from you're a podcast guy. You're a light years ahead of me in terms of the actual tech, and I get the impression that you're also a coder of some sort.
Not really. I am Damn. Not. I want to be. I would like to be a developer in the sense that I can assess and like really go through stuff. You know, I know how to traverse GitHub, and I use the command line all the time. So like I know my way around a computer, but I'm not very good with code in particular. I almost did that in school, and it was just the most tedious crap, and I didn't, particularly at the time, I didn't quite see the impact it could have. You know, it didn't seem that important to me. It just seemed something that I could probably get paid to do. And it wasn't until Bitcoin that I was like, damn it, why did I not do that?
Do you regret that now?
Can I ask you two questions? And again, like before we're recording, feel free to not answer. But, oh, and also, can I disclose the state that you're from or no?
Oh, yeah. I'm from North Carolina.
Okay, yeah.
We're backcountry boys, yeah.
So a guy and I were DMing back and forth before this to set this thing up and figured out they were both Carolina boys.
Right.
Are you, do you mind giving me like an age range?
I'm 31.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm 30. So damn. Yeah. Like we're probably basically.
So you guys definitely did go shining for Sasquatches.
Ooh, that sounds at like one fun. Point.
And what did you study in school?
Film, believe it or not.
Really? Film okay. Products. But that makes sense. Yes. Knowing, I won't say where you went, but that makes sense because mm-hmm. there's, oh, yeah, whatever the history, and I won't say anymore. But
yeah,
That's cool. That's cool. So that is an about face then.
Mm-hmm. I still actually use it when I'm editing my podcast. I told you I record in OSIN Audio, that program.
Yeah.
When I'm putting like my tracks together and doing all that stuff, I still use Final Cut Pro. I still use video editing software to do it because I'm
That's
just familiar.
Right.
See,
right.
We should have gotten you on here to talk about film. That would have been a totally utilizing all of your abilities. Come on here. Oh, you know what we could do? We could have Guy back on when we watch Come to Live.
Oh, my God, man. Dude, have you ever seen that movie?
No. What is this?
Oh,
I'm a huge movie buff. Tell me.
Okay, well, this one's a little
Well, this is hardly a movie.
All right. So one night, probably 6 months, it was around Christmas last year, mm-hmm. I was allegedly on my couch alone participating in some plant activities. And I was looking around.
Sounds
on,
nefarious.
Yeah. And I was looking around on Amazon Prime Video for They Live, the popular
the John Carpenter film.
You know, cult classic film from the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
The Damn Woods actually just did a podcast on it recently.
Did they really?
Yeah.
Nice.
Good.
I got to listen. Did you know that's one of my favorite movies? John Carpenter's my favorite director.
Really? No, I did not know that. Maybe you told me.
They Live is probably my favorite film from him, maybe second favorite.
Okay, so interesting fact, I've never actually seen it because I couldn't find it on the I had this thought that night. I was like, I need to watch this movie because it's ridiculous. Knowing me, like, that I have not seen
it. You've not done that.
You'd
yeah.
love it.
Yeah.
Right. So, anyway, I put in They Live, mm-hmm. and the suggested titles came up because they didn't have They Live, and one of them was called Come to Live, C-U-M. And I was like...
Like the ejaculate. Like,
well, I can't not at this point. Like, and, dude, Guy, have you ever seen The Room?
Yes. Yes, okay. It was one of my favorite movies.
It's,
so
it's worse
many.
Than that.
It's worse than that?
It's empirically worse than that.
Oh, wow.
Like, there is no physical way that... Dude, I don't even know what I watched. Like, I don't know if it was a really bad porn or a really bad movie with nudity. Like, I don't know what it was supposed to be. And it was just...
Somebody took, like, 10 different genres and a really, really... deep level of incompetence and just put it in a blender.
Dude, yeah. I don't even know, whatever. People just have to go out and just watch
Come to Live. I'll remember that. The Room and Birdemic are like my absolute favorites.
Do you know that I've seen The Room like maybe 10 or 11 times already, and I've met Tommy twice.
Wait, what?
Like, I've met Tommy Wiseau like two times.
Oh, really?
I've gone to screenings.
He's my hero.
From New York.
Is he from New York?
He is. First of all, he's not from New York. I don't know where he's from.
I don't think anybody really knows where he's from.
I hope to live the rest of my life without knowing where he's from.
I feel like he's French Canadian. I have no idea.
Sestero?
Greg Sestero? Yeah, the disaster artist. Yeah.
I have yet to watch the movie,
yeah,
but I did read the book, and I thought it was great.
You know what? So I meet Tommy Wiseau. I met him. The first time I ever met him was one of the most ethereal experiences I've ever had. I feel like I took ayahuasca. So I meet the guy. He is, first of all, he's rock solid. It's really strange. You go up to hug him.
Where?
So you go up to hug the guy, and he's pure cement. He's like incredibly, incredibly buff for some reason. and he smells like mothball. He smells like mothball, and his hair is a fucking ragged mess. I don't know what that guy does with his time now, because he's a multimillionaire on one of the worst movies ever made. I don't know what he does other than go around and showcase that film, but he's an enigma.
It has to take up all his time. It has been running in theater showings for like 16 years.
It's like the Cats of films.
It's got to be breaking records at this point.
It must be.
It has to be.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to meet him, I want you to, you know, when you go up to give him a hug or a handshake, just give him a whiff.
Give him a whiff?
Just give him a whiff. Because he doesn't smell bad. He smells interesting.
He smells interesting.
One could not expect any less from Tommy Wiseau.
Oh, shit. See? Now we're rolling. Now we're talking about The Room.
Jesus Christ, man. Yeah, that that movie is...
amazing.
Yeah, it's just... it's a complete... You're just sitting there in a state of bewilderment for an hour and a half. Like,
oh, yeah.
Did y'all ever watch... this is... the Mystery Science Theater back in the day.
Yes, I'm an... Oh, dude.
Of course, yeah.
So
I love MST 3000, man.
So you're gonna love me if you don't know about this. Have you ever heard of Riff Tracks?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you know. Have you seen the Riff Tracks of The Room?
No. I didn't know they did it.
It is absolutely amazing.
Oh, shit.
Get trash. Get some guys together, hang out, and watch that.
Oh, man. Thank you so much. Yes. I feel like you've just improved my life quite a bit. I could probably get trash and invite some guys over tomorrow morning since I'm unemployed.
Do it.
Oh, it's so good, man. I we're totally derailing it from crypto here, but now's my turn.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Before you take over, hey, do you listen to, you know, the intro to MST 3000 guy?
Yeah.
Do you listen to Man or Astro Man, the guys that did that?
No.
That dude, that's a cool band. Man. They were kind of like an underground
Astro Man. You said
it's they're called Man or Astro Man.
Man or Astro Man.
Yep.
I thought you were. And I thought they had two names.
I don't know if you remember in the night. Oh, dude, actually, you're from where I'm from. Do you remember Southern Culture on the Skids? Scott's
it sounds really familiar, but I'm not.
Yeah, they're from Chapel Hill. They're UNC, I think.
Okay.
In the late 90s. And so there was like that resurgence of kind of surf rock back then. And Man or Astro Man was one of like these underground groups that was like really big into it. And I fucking love, they have I think it's like All Humans Must Die or something like that is an album. And it's so damn good. And it's got the intro to MST 3000.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool little tidbit if anybody out there is an MST fan.
I got them up YouTubes right now.
Yeah. Check it out. Yeah. Do you surf?
No, not really. No.
All right. Next topic.
Boo.
A boogie board. What's up?
Cardio.
All right.
Cardio. Do you ever just sit down? Do you ever do this thing we like normal people do where we just sit down for a while?
What are you talking to me?
Yeah.
No, man.
I feel like every time I get my adrenaline, it's like, yeah, I'm like, hey, do you want to do a podcast today? Nah, ski trip. All right. fuck.
Jesus. I'm a junkie.
Man, here's another one if we're going to do bad films. Have you ever caught any of the Neil Breen films?
No.
Oh, those are legendary.
Neil Breen?
Did you, before you go forward, Bert? I want everything to be compared to Come to Live. Like, I want to scale based on that. Have you seen that? Have you actually sat down and watched it?
No, I haven't gotten to see it. I'm waiting. I'm waiting for us to do a review.
You haven't watched it? I told you to watch it like 6 months ago.
No, I know, but I'm waiting for us to do a review on it because I want to be fresh.
Okay. All right. Fair enough.
So you've never seen any of the Neil Breen films, Fateful Findings, Pass Through, Double Down, none of these films?
No.
All right, so when you go back and listen to this podcast, I want you to remember the name Neil Breen, B-R-E-E-N, Neil Breen.
I'm literally not even finding this on
Google. Oh, he's so good.
You got to go down to your local library and use the Dewey Decimal System to find it.
Search Double Down.
B-R-E-E-N? Is that?
Yeah, B-R-E-E-N. Search Double Down film.
Double Down.
He is... a master. He's Tommy Wiseau probably doubled. He's a master at his craft.
It. Okay, yeah, I got it now. So ooh, good. This looks bad.
it's bad. All of them are. See, Double Down is my favorite of his films.
Never judge a movie, never judge a book by its cover. Always judge a movie by its cover.
This looks crazy. It's brutal. I wonder if it's on Amazon Prime.
I hope so, because Double you should down. Watch it tonight. You should watch Double Down tonight and Fateful Findings tomorrow.
is this a sequel? Because that would be a great name for
a sequel. No, it's not. Well, you know what? It's weird because it's kind of a sequel because he plays the exact same character, but it's not the same movie at all.
Jesus.
It's so bad. So, Guy, since we're on bad films, is The Room your favorite bad film?
Ooh, that's a tough one. It might be Birdemic. Birdemic is really so good. Much fun. I don't know. I go back and forth. It depends on how much I'm drinking.
I'm trying to think of some other bad films I've ever... have you ever seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
I don't believe I have.
Oh, do you see?
Man,
now
you're getting me a list here.
I'm giving you a list.
I have just mountains of crypto homework, and I don't need... A bunch of
we're going to drive the crypto economy podcast offline. This guy has to catch up on all.
Yeah, man,
sorry.
Episode in 20
podcast
days
today.
Oh, I'm trying to think of someone. Have you seen the classic Batman and Robin?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
That's a great bad film.
Yeah, I watch those. Actually, Riff Trax does some of those, believe it or not.
Oh really?
Particularly like the show. They'll do like that's like their new shorts or whatever. They'll do like those 15-minute episodes of the old Batman and Robin stuff.
Yeah, all these movies, they're so... There's a subculture of shitty movie watchers I like to consider myself a part of.
Yes.
And, man, it is some of the best entertainment you'll ever get, is watching these fucking incompetent morons just try and stumble their way through a Spielberg epic.
You have to really, like, respect them because... Like I can't think of how many times that I had like an idea to do like a stupid movie or a funny video or something, but then like, and I was so jacked about it in the moment, and then like 8 hours later or 2 days later, I was just like, nah, that's stupid. I shouldn't.
But they pursue.
I didn't have the confidence to just go with it. To think somebody could have such an unbelievably stupid idea and no idea how to actually execute it. And to follow through and make it to the end and release a movie is
just so good.
Just a pioneer of human ingenuity and go to itness, stick to itness.
The difficulty
there is something about it.
Yes,
the difficulty, and Guy, you would know since I mean, if you did do film, I mean, you've probably had to shoot your own films,
Yeah.
I mean, I've had to do that too. I'm not in film, but I'm in media studies, so you got to basically do all the same shit anyway. The difficulty of coming together with other people to properly do sound and lighting and scripting
and
directing actors, it's crazy. And to think that people like Tommy Wiseau and Neil Breen managed to do what we have to do, like, you know, but for college, obviously we had to do for college, but they managed to do it all the while it being fucking terrible.
Yes.
Is just a like nobody pulls him aside and goes, dude, this is fucking horrendous. Like,
yeah, right.
Nobody,
right.
It's like a train full of shit that just won't stop. Like it's gonna barrel into town and no one can stop it. Like most people would be like, hey, there's a bunch of shit on this train. Let's stop this train. It's amazing when those things get through. The amount of times I've tried to film things with friends and they were good. And we were like, we can't finish this. We just don't have the budget or the backgrounds necessary or the script is off. And it's just to think about it blows my mind. The amount of effort that it takes to film anything and then for it to all just be a waste.
Yeah, just to get your actors to care. I remember in college. Like I would get, you do auditions with just a bunch of college kids who, you know, it's like, I'll do it, be in your movie. Because half of them are just friends. And like just to get them, it's like, okay, we're setting up, we're rolling, everything's good. And then they're just cracking jokes the whole time. They just think
and
it's a whole
time.
I'm like, I'm trying to make a movie, I'm going to punch somebody, oh my God.
Right. Oh, It's just, you know, when you think about it hard enough, some of the greatest directors of all times, I mean like Jodorowsky is one of the most impressive directors of all time, or just Jodorowsky films are absolute works of art, and he managed to get everything right. And you have to say it's almost equally impressive when someone gets everything wrong.
Yeah, you're right. It's like the contrarian indicator. Like
it's
if you make every trade wrong, you're almost like a god because you've done something consistently. You know?
I don't want to derail this entire podcast, but Jesus.
No, man, let's take this thing off the fucking rails.
All right, Carr, hit me with your favorite bad movie.
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah, what you got?
I told you, and I've been telling you for 6 months, and you apparently haven't
gone on. It's it really come to live as your favorite bad movie?
Dude, it is so damn bad, it's beyond belief. It's you watch it with your face in your hands for an hour and a half. Like, Just like what you were saying. People voluntarily got up every day and went to work knowing what they were doing and
most
still
of
did
them don't
it. And
get
I don't
paid.
Know how.
Most of them don't get paid, Cor.
Yeah, well, they shouldn't because this thing was a piece of shit.
It's most actors, people don't realize this, but for terrible films, most actors don't get paid.
Yeah, there's no
like
money.
Either they do it voluntarily or they say they're going to get paid.
Right.
And then they don't.
Well, I mean, I guess, you know, to their credit, they made it on Amazon Prime. I mean, yeah. It's, you know, I guess there's something to that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, actually,
dude, that's success.
People are actually buying it. It's because it's so monumentally bad. It's like buying a Ford Pinto. I mean, just having it is kind of an interesting token.
It's charming,
of
right?
Existence.
Yeah.
I always leave that open as a possibility at some point, and I think I would consider it. It would take me a bit to come to terms with it. But if a movie that I had made became popular because it was terrible,
yeah.
I would embrace it.
Yeah, you
I
got
would,
to.
I would absolutely, and I would consider it like I made an impact on the world. It is not
yeah.
the one that I
you'd
had
be
expected
broken.
To make,
but
I am
be so
okay
broken.
With this.
We have a saying, guy, and it's called "Make America Weird Again," and it's just about embracing the weird and pushing the weirdness of this timeline.
Yes.
And at some point, you've just got to say, "Look, man, I got 7 years on this earth, and I just want to get weird."
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Just
that's all.
Do
that
something.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
I, you know, you would be broken up about it, though, that, like, your craft, everyone is like, this is fucking terrible. But at least, like you said, you'd be able to contribute to the weirdness of the timeline and eventually come to terms with it. But
And doing something extremely anything is interesting. You
that's
know,
true.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that just live and die on their couch. And,
that's true.
Like, you know, whatever. Go out and fail spectacularly. There's something there, too.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll end the course learning a whole lot more than everybody else, if nothing else.
The course, that's good. I like that.
Did you? I assume you took your film degree to its fullest, and you had to do a thesis.
I did.
Oh, Jesus!
Yep.
I'm glad that it's not my major.
Honors film thesis. Yep.
So what is that? Like, I'm as somebody that I was engineering, so I have absolutely no idea what.
Well, did you have to do a thesis in your I don't know what you do as an engineer. There's a sort of a thesis is the idea of at the end of your 4 years, you have to show essentially proof of work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
is you know, you have to come out with a film. You have to demonstrate that all of the things you've done in these 4 years can come together to produce something of value. I don't know if you ever had to do that with engineering. I'm sure you had to come do final tests, something that would show that you learned what you had to do.
Not. I didn't have to do anything that was like cumulative, though.
Oh yeah. See, you kind of in film.
The whole idea of making a film is just cumulative
exactly.
in its entirety. So
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So yeah.
But yeah, I had to do a thesis, and it wasn't actually a. My thesis actually held a topic, like it was because it wasn't a you had to do a production like final like senior production course,
right.
But then I also being in honors had to do like a specific thesis outside of it, and it was on like just a general topic of film production, and mine was just creating, getting like. Connection into the shot and like with the actor and what was going on an extremely low budget. Hey. part restriction, part interest. So, but of course I did showing my deep, deep geek. I did a ninja film and some friends of mine, and it actually wasn't half bad. We made, we took like a bunch of faux leather and some shin guards and made some pretty sick looking armor. And it was fun, but it was all about, it was the ninja fight was actually kind of irrelevant. It was all about getting like shots of like a camera hanging over them and moving with one of the actors like
yeah,
in line
right.
with
Most,
them.
They don't really care in your thesis about the actual content
yes.
so much as the
yeah it was
so
more about
the
production side of like how to rig the camera, how to make it so that the camera was turning with them when they rolled and like that kind of thing. So
which sucks because you're in film and presumably you're in film because you want to make films, not like technical
that was the thing is like I loved both of it, like that was my choice.
Oh okay.
I wanted to
at least you got to do that then. Yeah. I know most people who go into film, they just want to make films. Like, they don't want to have to constantly show off the fact that they know how to turn a camera on.
But, see, that's there was a deep nerd in me that just loved the cameras as well and what you could do with them. But it was all in the mechanism of storytelling. Like, I just, I loved it all.
Right. That's good.
Yeah.
That's
so what, so Guy, what did you end up like doing anything in film after that or?
I had my own media business for a couple of years, just kind of skated by being lazy and doing that.
Right.
I still have, I still do film stuff, pretty regularly actually, do little short films, work with some friends, dance crews, that kind of thing. It has never left. In fact, I want to do stuff around Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. And
I was going to say, has crypto sidelined your other interests, or has it flowed in? Has it dovetailed nicely into your other interests?
I'm hoping that they will re-merge at some point, but right now, Bitcoin has taken up my time. Like, I have. Whereas I used to spend a lot of time looking for camera equipment and good lenses and trying to figure out lighting and stuff, I've started to sell off a lot of my old stuff and just getting it down to what I need if I ever want to go out and just straight shoot something. Sometimes I don't even edit stuff anymore. I'll hand that off to somebody else and just outsource it.
That's what we were talking about.
Sorry.
Juggling it. Juggling this thing, like Carr and I said, could barely keep up.
Yeah.
I mean, and yet you have other interests that you want to kind of bring together. Do you think...
Too many.
Do you think...
Too many.
What you're doing in crypto now is... Are you... Do you think you're... I know, obviously, you're still learning. Mm-hmm. But do you think you're still learning at the level that you can't really focus on anything else?
I think it's just a matter of, do I want to? I just... Like I said, it just is utterly fascinating to me. So, like, when I'm going into my sixth article for the day and just reading 25 minutes of page after page of stuff, or, mm-hmm. you know, breaking into some stupid white paper and trying to figure out what the hell math equation they've got sitting up here. And I got Wikipedia and easymath.com and, like, you know, all this crap just trying to figure out what the hell they're talking about. It's more of just... It is so consuming because I love to do it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like I've found that as well. Have you read the Digital Price Coin white paper?
I can't Don't say let him do I it. Know that one.
Don't let him do it to you.
Because somebody near and dear to this podcast edited it.
Well, I'll have to check it out. Let me put that on my list.
Let me or whoever it may be know if you see any errors.
Okay, I will do Digital Price Coin. I will remember that one. Sounds like a promising project. Good community.
Yeah, it's great, man. It's great.
Really just...
It would be cool if you could take your film
really
efforts
and... digging in for the long haul.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
It would be really cool if you could take all your efforts that you went to in school and do a documentary about crypto or even...
I've seriously considered it, but I think it's a matter of, you know, capital and time and, like, what exactly to do with it. Because there's been a number of, you know, Bitcoin and cryptocurrency documentaries out there that are all interesting. I've seen probably most of them at this point. I'm sure there are some that escaped by that I didn't know about. But, yeah, I mean... That would be a project that I'd be seriously interested in, but, you know, it would probably kill the podcast for a while.
Ah, oh, that's true. Well, you can always get this maniac, this glue-huffing maniac, to sign in for you.
I'm sure. Available literally any time of day.
It's true, because, I mean, I do feel bad sometimes because we do not focus nearly enough on crypto for his sake. I feel like he's just raring to go.
Is this your fix? Is this your crypto fix?
Yeah.
That's why I feel like...
No, but I like that we're just all over the board. I don't like being rigid or rules.
Well, that's why for the first 45 minutes of us recording, I just let you go.
Or just quiet in the background. It's like those... Yeah. Like, can you repeat those letters?
Except for the one sneeze.
Yeah, that was emphatic, too.
You did contribute.
That really marked a sea change in the flow of the podcast, too.
Really healthy sneeze there.
Yeah, oh, that was good. You sound strong. You sound very strong.
Are we wrapping this one up?
Yeah, man. I feel like I could go for another hour. Like, I'm having such a blast, but probably for the sake of everybody listening, we should wrap it up. But,
just nerd out.
I don't know, man. Guy, I hope you're down to come on again at some point.
Absolutely, man. Just hit me up. Cool. I'll be around. I'm trying to get into pretty regular with interviews and chatting with other people about it. And I want to kind of branch this out more into public speaking. I've done a couple of events recently, and I absolutely loved it. So
you like public speaking, huh?
Do what?
You were up at Crypto Lina, right?
Yes, I did go. I did not speak.
Yeah, I wanted to go to that so bad. Yo, does Jameson Lopp live in Durham?
I see him around. I know he lives somewhere in the Raleigh-Durham area when I go.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to go so bad this year, but I couldn't make time. But from Raleigh, so like I've got it would have been so damn easy, and I just zoned on.
Hey, man, when you're in town, when you're in the area, I'm nearby. Hit me up.
Are you up at in the Triangle?
I'm in the area. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. I definitely will. Absolutely. I think I'm gonna be out there. I'm hoping to be out there in October. I gotta see the folks, but yeah. We'll be in touch.
Cool.
And
should get all North Carolina crypto people together.
yeah. I was gonna say I saw Jameson Lopp on somebody posted. Oh, it might have been you that was posting
probably.
It. Somebody like came up with a database of all of the physical attacks of Bitcoin.
Yes, yeah, that was Jameson. I think he started that GitHub page. Yeah.
I saw Jameson, and I was like going through it, and I saw Jameson Lopp, and it said Durham, North Carolina, and I was like, holy shit, he lives in the area. Holy shit, I didn't know that. I just always assume it's like somebody lives in Austin or LA or San Francisco or something, like, and
obviously cool. You're in Los Angeles or Lisbon, you know.
Right? And it's crazy that Durham's come around because, man, when we were kids, like, you didn't go to Durham. Like, you didn't. That place was a fucking rolling dumpster.
Yeah, I know it's on the up and up now, man. It's coming back.
It's cool to see it come around, yeah. But, yo, Guy, thanks so much for coming on. This has been a really big blast, and Bert and I have got to do a couple of plugs, but I'm sure you got stuff to say, so give everybody – you know, an update on what you're doing.
Just I got the podcast and I'm trying to expand it to a number of other things with, you know, interviews and stuff included, but it's daily, so I've always got stuff coming out, and that's just the Crypto Economy Podcast. There's actually another one with practically the same name that we coincidentally started at almost the exact same time. It's like within days.
That confused me too.
But it's the one with the coffee mug and the headphones, so if you're looking
I'll link it.
Yeah, that's the icon.
And the other one's got like a blue icon. I think they're down in Austin.
Yeah. But check out the podcast. Follow me on Twitter at The Crypto Economy. I post some anti-government stuff every once in a while, but it's mostly crypto. And
I see you tossing us a retweet.
I throw in some fag content every once in a while.
Good. Well, hopefully there will be a little bit more intermittent.
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think that's it. Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah, I'll put a personal plug in for you. I just really appreciate it because there's no venom. There's no presumption of anything. You just deliver information.
I just want to know. I just want to know.
Yep.
Want to know it all and have the right answer at the end of it.
So I wish you the best, and I know that you're making a lot of moves, especially recently in that direction, and I hope it all turns out well. So
cool. Thanks, man.
Bird, you want to kick this off and I'll plug the gaps?
Yeah, sure. So the regular podcast as always, let's plug Anarchy Ball first. Free Man Beyond the Wall podcast, Mance Rader. He's been on the hot seat lately on Twitter.
Yes.
And so everybody needs to listen to his episode. So he, you know, because he put his heart and soul into that episode, and people prejudging, I think you guys need to listen to it. Who else we got? We got Jeremiah Harding every Wednesday, every Sunday. He shoots the shit with the internet people. We got Rollo and Slappy, of course, our blood brothers. We're going to be doing...
Rollo, so me, Bird, and Slappy and Rollo are in a group text, and I get one from Slappy. Oh, shit, are we breaking up? Yo, Bird, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, okay.
He had to sneeze again, so he muted.
I got during the episode, I like laughed out loud because I got an episode or a text from Slappy saying I'm one more stupid Twitter rant away from quitting.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
I was like, Jesus.
Yeah, I look forward to Slappy texts.
Yeah. So, oh yeah. So we're gonna be. Well, I guess they're gonna release theirs before this comes out, so we don't need to plug.
Well, no, us. We should get the plug because there are some people who don't listen to them that listen to us. So we are going to be hosting their 100th episode. Well, we actually probably just did host their 100th episode. Ask Me Anything sort of episode for all of them. It's their 100th. So big celebration. Go give them a listen if you don't already. Who am I forgetting? Dino Files, the Rogue File. Yep. Listen to that. Peaceful Treason. Really just a fucking awesome podcast. It is.
Yeah, it really
if
is.
You like... If you like the Crypto Economy podcast and you like the cool delivery and the facts, you got to listen to the Peaceful Treason podcast for everything
Peaceful Treason. Man, y'all give me a long list here. I got to check this stuff out.
Yeah.
Man, they are.
It's the
They put in so much effort.
The fag sphere.
Yeah, man. They put in so much effort for what they do. I need to give them recognition for it because the audio quality is always great. The topics are always great. They do Cerveza of the Week. And even though I'm not a beer drinker, it's just a great middle point to their episodes. I can't say enough good about them. And then we have, I guess, for the people who enjoyed this podcast for the crypto content, we have, you know, should we plug our upcoming guest who we talked about? I don't think he's coming up next week.
I don't know if we should or shouldn't, so let's err on the side of safety.
Okay, so for all the people who like the crypto episode in the next upcoming episodes, I can't tell you when, but we have a pretty big name in the crypto sphere.
Satoshi Nakamoto, I'm not sure.
Yes.
Going to be revealing his identity on our podcast, so tell your friends.
I'll be coming back on in just a couple of days.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, man. There you go.
Cool. So I think is that everything
should
we got?
Be. If we forgot your plug, I deeply apologize. Please send me hate mail.
Cool. All right. Until next week, keep two hands on the wheel.
Thanks, guys.
Peace.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.